Oh, baby. Didn't make it look easy there at the end, but in the end, the Nets do pull out the win over the San Antonio Spurs. It took an overtime. It took a Kyrie missed layup there at the end of regulation and a sequence of events that made it look like things were sort of going downhill. But then the superstars, they act like superstars, and the Nets get the win. We're going to cover it all here. We'll talk about the game in San Antonio. We'll talk about the play of James Harden and Kyrie Irving. We'll get into some of the role players and how they're being helped when it happens about that you play with two superstars. And of course, we're going to have to talk about Nick Claxton because, again, we get another sample size that really has us dreaming on the upside for this guy. It's a packed podcast. We're going to break the whole Spurs game down. But first, the theme music.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome back to the Locked On Nets podcast and the Locked On Podcast Network, your team. That's the Nets every day. I'm Doug Norrie. Got you covered at DFSR for all your betting NBA needs. And that is Adam Armbrecht. You know him, silky smooth voice of the Brooklyn Nets on Sportscaster, one of their lead NBA analysts. I got the word right as well. How we doing, buddy?
Hey, it's a wine and dine in San Antonio, man. Spill me and thrill me. The Brooklyn Nets took us on a bit of a trip here tonight, coming off that Saturday night loss to Dallas, wanted to bounce back, and we eventually did.
Well, you don't break an 18-year curse of not being able to win in a place and do it easily, right? There's no way. They haven't. This is the first win.
Is 5-43 solid in San Antonio? Is that a record that you think a franchise should be proud of?
Oh, it's probably just more of a testament to how great San Antonio has been after all these years. But this is their first win since, what year was it? It was 19. I can't even do the math. 2002.
He's all right.
I mean, this is that. I'll tell you right now, that me doing that right there was dangerously close to us starting the podcast again because that was not a great look for me not being able to do the 2021 minus 18, 2002, which doesn't really work. Anyway, it wasn't going to be easy and it was looking like it was in hands. And then it kind of everything goes wrong at the end to force an overtime, only for everything to go right in overtime. So I think that was kind of, I think the basketball gods ended up landing the score in the correct place here, but it didn't mean that it wasn't an easy path to get there when you factor the last few minutes of this game.
Was it a problem for you at all? Because ultimately, they said the Nets do win in overtime. Was it a problem for you when I said we'll have plenty of time to get it set up after overtime and you thought that you had somehow fallen behind in the feed only to have Murray hit that ridiculous shot to send this one for an extra five?
Yeah, well, I did think you were messing around with me. So, you know, if you want the little playback here, Adam and I will text each other during the game a few times, and then we'll kind of just like lay our schedules out to make sure we're going to both be around to record, because we basically try to record right after these games to get as fresh a take as possible. So when I texted you, and then it went to overtime 2 minutes later, you know, I was 100% convinced that I had, because I was streaming the game. I was 100% on League Pass. I was 100% convinced that I had just fallen behind and you had already seen it happen. So to have it, because, you know, look, we're ready to rock and roll, man. We want to jump on this podcast as soon as possible to lay out the game. And I wanted to just kind of get the Nets win in hand, and to have it go to overtime is one of those little, you get, you know, 5 extra minutes of basketball, but it's one of those little gut punches on timing. So that did end up being a prediction that you didn't really want it to go. I will say this one thing about the game here. Maybe you got this feeling too, and maybe you out there who have watched the game as well. I got this feeling watching this game that if I had been watching without the score in front of me, I would have thought the Nets were winning this game easily. And I don't know if it was a testament to how the Spurs just kind of hung around. I don't know if it was a testament to, or just maybe just me watching it incorrectly and maybe thinking that there was something happening that there wasn't. But did you feel, that's why I said the overtime played out the way it should have, because I felt like the Nets were just firmly in control this whole game. And I kept just being continually surprised that the game was as close as it was, because it just felt like they kind of had everything going. And I don't know if it's just a few easy baskets that the Spurs were getting on the offensive end. But I didn't feel like the flow of the game represented a really close one, but I don't know if I'm just seeing things that really weren't there.
Well, one of the things that I always look at, and we've talked about a number of times, is how the Nets come out to start games, and then also how do they protect the basketball? Because when you're as talented as they are, if you can also eliminate turnovers, then you feel really bullish about getting a win on any given night. And in this one, they had five total turnovers. So you weren't seeing some of the careless passing or some of those miscommunications early on, which we've seen leads to easy transition baskets for the other team. So that was, I think, one element that maybe the eye test said, we should just be beating up on them. And then there's the other side of it, because even on paper, I mean, San Antonio is now 17-13 with the loss, but they're 17-13 in the Western Conference. When you look at their roster on paper, they have no business being in the position that they're in. And it is. We know it's Greg Popovich. I'm not going to, you know, go into singing praises. He seems like he's a Grant Gandalf the White down there. But it is a value of what they do and how they execute. And I did feel like I was seeing a bit of a mirror image with DeMar DeRozan for the San Antonio Spurs, in the same way that Kyrie Irving can be looking to go into that mid-range game, you know, time and time again on a given night. And then, more specifically in terms of the pace of his play, DeRozan is very similar to Harden in that regard. He just kind of methodically gets into his rhythm, finds his spaces, gets his shots. So this had that back and forth, and it looked like a lot of things were going well. We're going to get into some of the other players for the Nets that had big games here. But when you're checking these boxes, just doing the eye test, you ultimately assume Brooklyn must be up by 10, must be up by 15, must be stretching a lead. And really, San Antonio hung around. They had a couple of runs that they needed to get back into this game, especially late in the fourth quarter. But they did the job to make this closer than I think it would have been on most nights, regardless of the opposition.
Yeah, I think you actually make a great point about the lack of turnovers, because like the fact that they just did turn the ball over, so that's what I kind of was meaning about playing a pretty crisp game. I thought their offensive game was really in flow. They were really, really connected throughout the game. The passing was just completely on point along with the spacing. Maybe not every shot went down, obviously. Still shot 43% from three in this game, 45% from the field. But there was a definitive flow to their game that felt very just in sync with each other. And maybe that's what I was sort of, that's mostly what I'm reflecting on, is that this, you know, Harden and Kyrie, who we're going to get into their stats here in a second, but them combined with some of the role players who we'll talk about also, it just had this flow of the game where I feel like if you play this out with this sort of connection most times, you're going to see the Nets, well, and maybe it ends up just being the way it was supposed to, because I was going to say win by double digits, but yeah, they did win by double digits. So maybe this is all much a long ado point about nothing for me, because it's mostly that, and maybe that's what I was referencing at the beginning, where the basketball gods did figure out how to make sure this game ended the way that it was supposed to end, because I just still, even though it went to overtime, never felt like the Nets had any business not winning this game by a decent amount. So
you mentioned the ball movement. So early in the game, again, you know, defensively, there was pretty good rotations. There was some nice weak side help by DeAndre Jordan, by some of the bigs. I just thought things looked pretty solid defensively. Now, they started collapsing and the perimeter opened up a little bit for San Antonio for stretches. But there was a sequence you talked about in terms of ball movement. There was a sequence where Harden works down in, draws two, drops it down to Brown, who's heading into the low post. He basically does a little flick touch pass to DeAndre Jordan. Jordan kicks it right back to Harden, and then Harden does a little touch pass over to Joe Harris. Now, he ultimately misses the three, but that sequence was so crisp, so fluid. Everyone knew where each other was going to be. You know, it was very anticipated play from everyone, and that felt like what I was watching, right? That's why you feel like the Nets would have been leading this thing by a larger margin, because everything was very crisp, especially on the offensive end, really from the word go.
I made a note of that exact same sequence and wrote, and basically my last note was, even though it's a miss, it was perfect, right? Like it was, because it really did embody everything that they were getting going. And they had so many sequences like that this game, even where there were misses. Shamet missed a bunch of open threes that he should have knocked down. It's okay. These things happen, but they were all born out of great ball movement, and the great ball movement was leading to stuff on the inside where it looks super easy as well, you know, behind the back lobs to DJ, right? Slip passes to Brown multiple times where it looked like it was just, everything was just completely on a string. They can do anything wrong. So I'm singing all these praises mostly to finally reiterate the point for the fourth time, to say this was a game where, again, I went to overtime and it just felt like the Nets were in full control. Testament again to the Spurs to be able to hang around against a team that's playing so well. But it just really was one of those games where I just felt like, in the end, things worked out the way they were supposed to with the Nets taking the victory. We're going to get into these just unbelievable lines from both James Harden and Kyrie. Got to talk about some of the performances of the role players. Nick Claxton, we'll get into that shortly. First, I want to talk to you about our friends over at Theragun. Look, right now, the stress of daily life can weigh on your body. It's whether you're an elite athlete or maybe someone a little bit more like me. It's tough to get through the day without some of that tension, especially after you've worked out. Theragun is just one of the all-time solutions for this thing. It's a handheld percussive therapy device that releases deep muscle. Now, you know me, Adam. I got the ankle issue going on here, right? I'm not going to go into the ankle, why the ankle is an issue, but it's definitively an issue.
It's Theragun, basically paper mache down there.
Oh, or worse. But Gen 4 Theragun, it doesn't just feel great. It gets to the source of what that pain is by releasing tension that's there, helps get more flexibility, and it uses that percussive therapy. And this is from them, and I can feel the difference. I would never have said this percentage, 60% deeper than the vibration alone. You can just feel the difference. I maybe would have said closer to 70, but it's nice to have the number pointed out for me. You want to treat that muscle tension from working out, or maybe you have that injury like I'm talking about with the ankle, or just with those stresses of everyday life. There's no substitute for Theragun Gen 4. Theragun is trusted by 250 professional sports teams like Real Madrid out there, for all you soccer fans, and athletes like Paul George, DeAndre Hopkins, little nook over there with the Cardinals, Maria Sharapova, and more. Right now, you can try out Theragun for 30 days starting at only $199. More than worth it if you're working on those injuries or just looking to release tension. Go to Theragun.com/lockedon, just like our podcast network, right now, and get your Gen 4 Theragun today. That's Theragun.com/lockedon. Theragun.com/lockedon. And something else that can bring you a little tension these days, shopping for car parts. Man, I'll tell you, all the makes and models that are out there, all the parts that you could just kind of get your hands on, things go wrong in your car all the time. You don't want to go to the mechanic. You don't want to go down to the local place where you're going to go in there. They're going to say they don't even have your thing on order after they walk to the back for 30 minutes and you don't know what's going on back there. They tell you to come back after they order it. Look, skip all that stuff right now and go to rockauto.com. Family owned for over 20 years. They make it super easy to find all the parts your car needs. Searchable database based on make and model. You just go right in there, make, model, starts dropping down the menus. You're going to find the car part you need right away. They're going to have it, and you're going to get it sometimes 30 or 50% cheaper than those aforementioned local places that I mentioned. And forget the mechanic. You can't even do the percentage on how much cheaper you're going to get it from the mechanic. Like I said, family-owned business, serving auto parts customers for 20 years. RockAuto.com is the perfect place for your auto and body parts for hundreds of manufacturers. They have everything from engine control modules to brake parts. If you're a car guy, then you're going to know what that means. I just know that I'm just getting the best price at rockauto.com. It's unique and remarkably easy to navigate, and you know the prices are the best around. Right now, go to rockauto.com to see all the car parts available, and all you have to do is when they say, how did you hear about us? Just type in Locked On, just like the podcast network. That's it. Locked On. They'll let you know that we sent you, and you'll know you're getting the best deal out there. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com.
And today, on the Locked On Today podcast, with players fleeing the Houston Texans, what NFL team will be the worst to play in 2021? Who do you want to avoid playing for if you're an NFL free agent right now? Could be Houston. And you're going to get more of the sports news that you need in less time with the Locked On Today podcast. Subscribe to Locked On Today wherever you get your podcasts. Okay, so we cover. The Nets end up winning in overtime. It's great. There's some role players that we're going to get to in the closeout segment. But really, the focus on Kyrie Irving and obviously James Harden and the way that they impacted this game throughout. So, you know, to start this one, and we said everything looked crisp, everything looked flowing, and you may be thinking, yeah, but you had 7 of 21 combined from the field for Harden and Kyrie Irving. Over that exact same stretch, though, they also combined for 19 assists. So, you know, the impact that you get from these players in a game, and they're still looking for their shot, obviously, but they're drawing multiple defenders. They're getting good ball rotation. They're finding the easy lobs to DeAndre Jordan. They're finding Bruce Brown. Even though Joe Harris had a bad shooting night from the field, they're still looking for him, you know, for open threes in the corner. There's actually a lot of open shots that probably didn't fall from the perimeter that could have. So that's how they start the game. And the assist numbers are great to look at and hang your hat on. But then, as I kind of assumed, and it's easy to assume when it's Harden and Kyrie Irving, I said, listen, don't be surprised if these guys turn it on when it's the most important. They end up closing out the game 15 of 24 combined from the field. Harden does a lot of heavy lifting in that, but it is ultimately Kyrie that has a couple of key three-pointers and then gets into the lane for some floaters as well. What did you see in this one in terms of those two players gauging the tempo of the game and trying to assert themselves really in every facet, and then ultimately knowing when it comes down to crunch time, yes, put the ball in one of our hands and we're going to take care of this?
Yeah, well, it's funny you say that because Kyrie gets a little weirdly bailed out here at the end because the last sequence for him, really the last like two sequences for the Nets were based on Harden and Kyrie sort of making not mistakes necessarily, but just kind of poor shots that or shots that are good for them, but they just happen to not go in. So Harden gets the little runner that actually I really didn't think it hit the rim. They got the shot clock reset and they got into the final possession. And then Kyrie, I mean, does Kyrie hit that shot 999 times out of 1,000? I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Like that little finger roll layup where he's basically probably more open than he thought. I think actually in the end, he probably just got more open than he thought he was going to, like was expecting to get fouled at some point and then just realized that he was going to, and I didn't even have to shoot it either. So it's kind of, it was a little mental error, but still like when you're physically trained to take that shot every single time, I don't blame him. It's like when it's like the running back running to the end zone and knowing they're supposed to kneel. Like, look, if a guy goes into the end zone, what do you want him to do? He's been doing this one thing his whole life. It's hard to remember in the moment. So
the Ahmad Bradshaw New York Football Giants Super Bowl, right?
We'll always remember when he hits that knee and then slowly like the tree falling in the woods fell over into the end zone.
Good.
So yeah, that was an all timer. So I think I kind of think that for Kyrie ends up being the thing. So it's they kind of weirdly bailed out at the end, but it's also one of these things where during the entire game, they're so good that we again forget that their best player isn't even on the court. Like these guys have so much gravity around them and demand so much attention from the opposing defenses that it's like almost easy to forget how easy they make it on the rest of the players because they draw so much attention and there's so many unique defenses that are just thrown just at them to sort of try to slow them down that the fact that they still, even with that, are able to command one so much attention and then also fill the box score up in sort of like what almost appears near the end of it just to be effortless. Again, we're running out of new superlatives to kind of mention about these guys and just how good they are and consistent they are on a game-to-game basis. Even a game where Kyrie goes 9 of 24 from the field, it doesn't really matter even if he's sort of struggling from the field because the defense can't just do things differently, right? It's still such a gift to have him on the court even when he's struggling because it's even if he's shooting like it's a little more than 33% from the field, but even if he's like having an off night, it doesn't really matter for the opposing defenses. They still need to work absolutely overtime to make sure you're not getting him into the wrong switch or just leaving him alone, and then Harden's kind of just toying with the switches over and over again. So a long-winded way to say, again, it was just all on display when you have two of the top scoring guys who do it sort of in different ways on the court. It just makes everything else around it easier, and they can just kind of flip the switch even if they've been struggling at parts during the game.
Yeah, and it's not, like you said, these aren't role players, right? These aren't streaky shooters that you bring in off the bench for a hot hand and maybe have a nice 3 or 4 game run over the course of the season. So to your point, you don't say, oh, well, you know, Kyrie's only made a few buckets here. He's shooting under 30% early in the game. Let's go ahead and leave him single covers. Let's not really worry about him as he works into the paint. Let's try to stay at home on Landry Shamet, right? No, that's not what you're always going to worry about if Harden or Kyrie, and obviously when KD's on the floor, if they have the ball in their hand, you're paying attention to what they're doing and you're concerned about how they're going to impact the game. It's why it opens it up so nicely for everyone else. So there's that element of it, and then you touched on it, being able to turn it on when you need to. You know, I said, they had 19, it was 10 first half assists for James Harden. They only combined, there was only one more assist for either one of these players, and it was Harden to Kyrie on a nice three-pointer that helped, I think, put the Nets back out in the lead at the time. Late in the third quarter, I think. But they basically turned away from that. I think that there was some reality when you look at the players available for Brooklyn and who wasn't going to be able to be there, especially in the fourth quarter, and needing to change how you approach the rotations if you're Steve Nash. I think, again, Harden and Kyrie both kind of knew, we're not going to be able just to live in this facilitation mode. And you could even go the step farther because you're having an off night from Joe Harris, right? If he's really locked in and firing lasers, you probably lean even more heavily into him. So these guys both turn it on. They take it over. And ultimately, like you say, you get the win, so I guess you don't worry about too much. The only other thing that bothered me, and I think you referenced it a little bit, was the Kyrie shot from the wing when it was essentially, there was a couple, you know, I know he ends up getting the lane. That little floater play where he could have just held onto the ball probably and gotten fouled, that's neither here nor there because he is going to make that, as you know, 99,000 times out of 10,000. But the other shot that he had on the right wing was a triple with probably 15 seconds in the shot clock late in the fourth quarter. And it's one of those things that he does do. And when they go in, it's great. But when they don't go in and then in transition, you see San Antonio come down and get the tying basket. Like, you know, those sequences in conjunction, you start to go, well, you know, I really wish that could have looked different. And also, we're not here without you. So when we say this time and time again, right, you live with some of those things. But that is a mild frustration that I do have with Kyrie because he does get trigger happy, I think, at certain sequences late in games.
Yeah, see, that's what I was kind of mentioning before about how I think that he's just so trained to do a certain thing that I think that times that if there's lapses in judgment about when it should happen, I think that's mm-hmm. just something you have to live with. And I think we've seen this lapse in judgment before. We're too early in the shot clock. We're getting a pull up. We're getting these, like, you know, pull up three pointers early, like, or late in games when they could be like looking for maybe just a better look. And you know, you said it's a trigger happy thing. I think that's what it is. But I think it's the part that you probably never want to untrain him, because when it's working, it's among the best in the game. So I agree with, and that's sort of what I was saying. It's like at times it cannot look great, but it's also the thing you live with. To get the crazy, just like the dagger shots that he's been able to hit. He's hit a couple of them in overtime. The aggression that he kind of shows going to the basket time and time again. It's the thing where it's like, okay, you're going to live with these things happening every once in a while, with the idea that you kind of do want, over the long term, you want this stuff to happen more and more. So, I agree with you. And there are times when maybe we're more frustrated if this ends up in a loss. I almost guarantee we would be. But it's it's also the same thing. It's also the reason why you won, right? So, like, it's...
Well, and inside of the 9 of 24 performance, he was 6 of 10 from deep, you know? So inside of a bad shooting night, he actually had one of his best shooting nights from beyond the arc. So that's almost the perfect microcosm of, yeah, this is the give and take sometimes with a superstar talent like him. And when it pays off, it's great. And again, more often than not, it's going to pay off.
And it's like you live by the sword, you die by the sword. And much more, you know, you're going to live much more often with this kind of stuff. And I think that's what it is. And it's just, again, this is what happens when you get spoiled with superstars. We're already starting to see it. I know it's starting to happen for me already. After seasons of watching just non-superstars really play for the team and just being, have these gritty, gutty performances, when you have these two guys that are among the very best, it doesn't take long before you just start, like, sort of nitpicking I don't think we're nitpicking, but like you sort of like you hone in on these other little things, really kind of missing the forest for the trees, be like, oh right, no one else even has this on their team. Right, how many guys like this are even on how many even teams, most teams don't even have one of these guys, right? And right now the Nets have two, and there's a third sitting on the bench. And I think it doesn't take long as a fan base or a podcast in this case to just kind of start taking it for granted on a game-to-game basis. When we also, look, we didn't even talk about this, right? James Harden just dropped a freaking 30, 15, and 14. We didn't even mention it.
Gentleman's triple-double, and I wasn't even paying attention. They were like, triple-double for Harden. I was like, of course it is. I assume, like you said, now I'm just assuming. Yeah, triple-double, more often than not. Naturally, he's James Harden.
Like 30 points, 15 assists, 14 rebounds in 44 minutes for him. It's again totally effortless. Totally effortless. They did the same thing. I know the Spurs tried to throw some kind of trap stuff at them. They tried to blitz him a few times. Most times they were able to get him into the switch that he wanted, whether it was onto Trey Lyles early. They got him onto Poeltl a couple times. I can't pronounce this guy's name. Luke Samanajic. I've kept making a note over and over to how to say this. And guys, I screw some of these names up pretty bad. But they got these switches over and over.
Sounds like son of a B when Ian Eagle calls it out of the game. I swear, every time I was like, I think Ian Eagle really hates this guy because he's actually cursing at him when he gets to the hoop.
So they got these switches over and over on Harden when he was just like actively clearing everybody out. And so, again, it's just one of these things you just end up taking for granted. But this is also what happens when you have just two consummate superstars on your team, that even when there's mistakes made late in the game, you go into overtime and they just take over and win. Got to talk about these guys, the effect they're having on the role players as well in a second. First, let's talk to you about our friends over at Bet Online. Look, you're trying to get in action on the sports game. Some of these places can be tough to trust. Not betonline.ag. They're the fastest, easiest, and most trustworthy way to get your bets in on all the sports action you could ever want. NBA every single night, college basketball. You know, we're headed toward March Madness right now. Maybe you're into the NHL. You want to get out there with some bets on the ice. They got you covered. They had the Golden Globes the other night. Maybe you were into award shows or maybe just TV shows or reality stuff as well. Bet Online has everything you need. Real updated real-time odds and props on anything you can imagine, plus all the news and scores you need. It's just basically a one-stop shop for all your betting needs, and it's totally free to sign up. If you head on over to the website, betonline.ag, and you sign up today, you're going to receive a 50% welcome bonus when you make that first deposit, but you got to use the promo code LOCKEDON to unlock that deposit bonus. Right now, betonline.ag, promo code locked on, 50% welcome bonus in the first deposit. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts.
Cade Cunningham, Evan Mobley, Jalen Suggs, how much do you really know about these potential NBA stars of tomorrow? If you want to know more about them, then you need to subscribe to the Locked On NBA Draft Podcast. Prospect scouting reports, draft rumors, mock drafts, and full coverage of March Madness 4 days a week from credentialed draft experts. Subscribe today and follow Locked On NBA Draft. Now, the role players in this, and there's clearly a guy that need to wake up. I need to send in a potential call to Ian Eagle. I think I know exactly how this guy needs to be utilized. But inside of these role players, I'll just briefly push something out of the way here. Joe Harris had a bad shooting night, and I just, you want to know how good Joe Harris is? That performance tonight where he goes 3-10 from the field, you go back to January 20th where he shot 30% from the field or less. You have to go all the way back to November of the year prior to have a performance like that. This guy doesn't have off nights, and yet he had one like that. And in a game against San Antonio, it ended up being the bigs that had a huge role. And of course, our boy, who was just a thrill a minute, Nicholas Claxton, was absolutely otherworldly in this. It's time to, ready, release the Claxton. Come on. Come on.
Who's going to drop for that? Yeah, man. I mean, look, DeAndre gets the start and had a really, really nice game. We'll get to him in a second. But we got to talk about Nick Claxton's 17 minutes here. Because, again, Nets fans have been dreaming on the upside. And I was thinking, I was like, man, I am really glad Nick Claxton did not play before the James Harden trade. Because he is definitely in the James Harden trade, right? Like, if he's playing like this and you had even at these short little bursts of his minutes, there's almost no chance he gets out of that trade without being on another team. There's just, they would ask for him over a draft pick. What you're getting out of him, even in these short spurts, is really just the whole bag. And it almost feels like there's actually even more to unlock. And so we'll be at the point of sounding like we're going to be gushing here because the numbers have been limited. I said before that his defensive stats were not sustainable on a per minute basis like we had seen. That started to look incorrect. I mean, it's still not going to be. Three blocks and a steal in 17 minutes is not something that should be repeatable on a game-to-game basis. But he's so active defensively in the switches. I mean, the straight-up steal and off to the fast break, right after it actually looked like he had gotten hurt and gave me an absolute heart attack when he went down and grimaced and grabbed the leg and looked like he was in real pain, but it looked like he was probably just scared. But basically, a play later where he strips, was it Murray or DeRozan? He sure it was one of those two guys. He that he
yeah,
strips
I think it's Murray at the top of the key.
Yeah, Murray at the top of the key gets into a switch, which we're already starting to realize is not an advantage for these guards to be into a high end switch against Claxton, where he's like sort of the perimeter defender. He just straight up strips him and then is off to the races and then gets fouled. And that really, again, you didn't really need many more reminders. But if you have a defender that's his size that can do that on guards. Oh my gosh. I mean, what are we talking about here? Like, well, there's such considerable upside. I'm not even get to the points yet. The defensive piece alone is something to really, really, really start getting excited about, Nets fans, because if you put these superstars around a guy who's this active defensively with this kind of length, like, we're really starting to talk some big time upside here.
Yeah, has the three blocks. The steal, though, specifically, when you talk about it, it's not just that he got the steal, because you can be a big man and have active hands and get in the way and have somebody fumble it around. He reached in across the body, poked it away, and has enough quickness and athleticism to be able to pull his arm back away, avoid getting hit with a foul, or avoid getting fouled, by the way, to be able to get out in front and transition with that ball. So to your point, it's not just what he's doing, but in the way that he's doing it, because that tells you, okay, this isn't a fluke. This is something that you can rely on with consistency, and it obviously offers a very different and dynamic element when you talk about him coming in replacement of DeAndre Jordan. It's a totally
it's how a guard steals a ball.
That's what it looked like. Yep.
It's how a guy that's 6'4 or 6'5 gets his hands in to knock a ball loose and then get off to the races. Not how a guy, you know, what is he, 6'11, 6'10? That a guy that size, really, you do not see that kind of defense against a guy who's much smaller in a ball first guard. For a guy to do that in the switch that they were trying to invite is like, again, maybe it's a one-time thing, but not really, because his hands are so freaking active on defense, and this is why he's getting consistent blocks and steals game after game, even in limited minutes, because it's not a fluke. The guy is just this good on defense already athletically and has a defensive acumen in terms of just instincts. He has like defensive instincts like a guard, except he's built onto like a center's, or I mean a long power forward slash center's body. Again, I'm gushing because this is a guy that can... I know the minutes have been limited so far, but what we've seen so far is a guy that can definitely be in a closing unit with other superstars. And maybe we don't ever get to that point. I'm not sure. Maybe it's Jeff Green. But in the limited minutes we've seen him play so far, you can put him with those other guys. And if you put him next to Kevin Durant and he just keeps getting, you know, by even marginal degrees better, oh my goodness. This is a real thing. This is not a fluke here defensively. Like, this is not just an energy thing. This could be a real sort of like ball stopping, switch everything big that could end up closing really kind of big quality games for the Nets.
Yeah, and we've loved everything that Jeff Green has done for the Nets to this point in the season, right? We love some of the comp, even Bruce Brown. He's been fantastic. He had another great game tonight, by the way. Bruce Brown just keeps being Bruce Brown. At some point, you have to accept that is what he is on this team, and it's phenomenal. But to your point, everything from the All-Star break until the playoffs begin needs to be about acclimating Nicholas Claxton with KD and Kyrie and Harden, figuring out how you can continue to have him grow incrementally. Because, by the way, he was burnt out at one point in this game. He was huffing and puffing after he had his stretch. And, you know, interestingly, so first of all, he's fantastic. Release the Claxton. I'm gonna get that done. There'll be t-shirts available, trust me. Everyone's gonna love it. But I also thought, in the lack of, because you mentioned Jeff Green, didn't have him available tonight, no TLC available in this one either, so you know, and we had spent some negative time on TLC last episode, but so you end up being even smaller and even thinner. You don't have KD, so Nash actually, you know, he leaned heavy with DJ to start this one. He rode him very far into it. You didn't see Claxton until the second quarter. In the second quarter, in 9 minutes, 13 points, 3 rebounds, and a block for Claxton. So he ends up finishing with a 17-point line. You get some extra blocks in there. He has an assist as well, and just ends up with just 3 rebounds. That's where he stays. But that first 9-minute spurt for him alone was absolutely tantalizing for what this guy could turn into. And then what I really wanted to know, too, was because you sometimes find this with young players, and then you're playing the Spurs, and they have Popovich, and you think, okay, but if he comes back in the next time, are they going to have a new look, or how are they going to disrupt him? And maybe you would normally, but not with Kyrie and not with Harden on the floor. He came right back in, gave another great sample size of it. So all those little scares, the ankle tweak, he got hit in the eye on that dunk after the steal, and I thought, because he took a rest on his knee, I thought that he was reaching for his knee. So I am going to be on pins and needles in terms of his health, and I would not be shocked. I posted up on Twitter, over under of Nicholas Claxton minutes against Houston could be zero, just because you had such a positive vibe from him. You maybe, you know, played with fire with some injury concerns, and I know they're going to bring him along gradually to make sure that his development is the kind of thing that you get to hang your hat on when it comes to the playoffs.
Yeah, conditioning is the only thing right now. You mentioned he was huffing and puffing. It's just he has not played for a long time. So conditioning when you're going at 100% is just going to be something you have to ramp up into, right? Like we talked about how the Nets are playing his minutes carefully. Those got extended by 2 or 3 minutes in this game. So we're seeing the gradual sort of like pushing out in terms of how much he's going to be able to play. But we, like you said, we also saw him get tired in those moments too. That's going to happen when you're this active defensively too, because you are giving, you know, sort of max effort on both ends. So, I think what we end up seeing is like a slow push after the All-Star break into those low 20s, maybe like, you know, 23 to 24 minutes. And he probably just sticks in that range sort of going forward would be my guess, short of starting. And I don't think that's really probably in the cards here anytime soon. So maybe closing. I just don't think he'll probably end up starting short of maybe a few injuries in the bigs. But just the minutes that you've seen so far from this guy, the 40-ish minutes that he's played so far since coming in from the injury, I mean, have just been everything you wanted and more. And I was joking around on Twitter about which number player he was. Some people took it seriously. I don't think he's the, you know, fourth best player on the Nets right now. So
you actually started a bit of a debate. I was like, oh boy, here we go. I think
sometimes people don't get it. I was like, even some bigger accounts kind of jumped in like we were jumping the gun. I'm like, yeah, that's the joke. The joke is that we're jumping the gun. I don't.
It's dry, friends. Doug Norrie is a dry delivery. You got to start to come around.
43 minutes. I'm not going to put him. He's not the fourth star in the team. All right, we'll get into some of these other role players tomorrow. Get a little preview of the rest of the week leading into the All-Star game. Really nice win against the Spurs. Like I said, 18 years. I'm not going to do the math about how many years ago or what year that was, but it's just 18 years since they won in San Antonio. We will take it. The way you can help the podcast is to rate and review wherever you listen. To get those automatic downloads too, make sure you subscribe. Those are totally free ways to help the podcast. You know, you go and help the sponsors all obviously too. Theragun, Bet Online, Rock Auto. And rate and review the podcast wherever you listen.
Release the Claxton!
Adam Armbrecht.
One of the great American poets. We'll be back again tomorrow talking more Brooklyn Nets basketball.